Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, we break down President Trump's executive order on immigration. We go through the calls to remove Jesus Christ and his statue and image, thanks to the very foolish activist, Sean King. And finally, we end the show talking about the lies and the failures of Democrats in our urban centers across the country. We hit it hard. You guys are going to love this show. Facts first, as always on the Charlie Kirk Show. If you guys want to help support this program directly, go to charliekirk.com/support. Allows us to be self-sufficient. Email us your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. By the time you're listening to this, the president is probably speaking in Phoenix, Arizona. But if you guys get this podcast downloaded and you're in Phoenix, you're like, oh my gosh, I forgot. Well, you guys can go to trumpstudents.org and maybe catch us in time to hear the president of the United States address the next generation. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Promises made, promises kept. Today, the President of the United States, President Trump, fulfilled his promise to restrict immigration during a national pandemic. President Trump ran on tighter immigration. In fact, the American people have been voting for less and less immigration in recent elections, and the ruling class have been ignoring the will of the American people for far too long. Now, look, I think the best and brightest from around the world at the right time should be able to apply to come into the United States. However, during this national pandemic, during what we are experiencing right now, I've called for a complete and total moratorium of all entry into the United States. And so I support Senator Tom Cotton's RAISE Act once we get out of this economic depression or recession or whatever we're in right now. So today, President Trump signed an executive order to temporarily suspend H-1B, H-2B, H-4, J-1, and L-1 visas. Let's walk through what each of those are. First, the H-1B visa. This is a visa for specialty workers. The H-1B visa is a non-immigrant visa that allows U.S. companies to employ graduate-level workers in specialty occupations that require theoretical or technical expertise in specialized fields such as IT, finance, accounting, architecture, engineering, mathematics, science, medicine, etc. This specific type of visa ties you to an employer. So when you apply for an H-1B visa through Intel or IBM or Google, you're not allowed to go job shopping after that. You're almost tied to the corporation, in the words of Ann Coulter and others, as a form of almost indentured servitude. You're not able to have any sort of job mobility. Now, there's some positives to this, but mostly negatives. So the company has a huge amount of control over those workers. Now, mind you, a lot of the workers that come in for H-1B visas go to Fortune 100 or Fortune 500 companies. If you look at the data, there are hundreds of thousands of young American-educated students that go tens of thousands of dollars into debt every single year to try to compete for finance, accounting, architecture, engineering jobs. The major corporations want this H-1B visa, not because it is going to help the country, but it's going to help their corporate bottom line. Now, look, I'm a capitalist. I love the free market. I'm a big believer in it, but I'm a patriot before I'm a capitalist. And when we have convinced generations of young people to go into debt, to borrow extraordinary amounts of money with the promise that they might have a job at the end of their 4 years in college, the least that we can do is to make sure we're not going to be importing hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of foreign workers year after year. And again, I think in an ideal circumstance, there should be some form of merit-based immigration. The president supports this. Tom Cotton supports this. Not during a national pandemic. Not when you have 25 million people out of work. President Trump also suspended H-2B visas. These are non-immigrant programs that permit employers to hire foreign workers to come temporarily to the United States and perform temporary non-agricultural services or labor on one-time, seasonal, peak load, or intermittent basis. So closing off H-2B visas will guarantee wages will go up. And look, there is a lie that has been debunked and dispelled so many times that says that Americans will not do these jobs, that says that Americans will not compete in the labor pool. When you have tens of millions of people unemployed in our inner cities, when you have millions of black Americans that are now looking for jobs, why would you bring in more individuals into the H-2B labor pool? President Trump also suspended H-4 visas. Family members of H-1B workers are admitted to the United States under the H-4 category. So basically, this is an extension of an H-1B visa. So President Trump suspended H-1B visa, saying, wait a second, if I'm going to let people in to compete against our workers and our tech workers in the skilled trades, and again, there was more legitimacy to this argument, but there was still a lot wrong with it, but there was more legitimacy to this argument when he said, well, we have more jobs than we're able to fill them. And that's why maybe Senator Tom Cotton's act would be something that's reasonable. Right now, when 25 million people are out of work, it is inexcusable for some of the Republicans to say that we need to continue the H-1, H-2, H-1B, H-4 visa programs as is. So the H-4 visa is not anyone that's actually going to be coming here to work. These are family members of an H-1B worker. So this is a form of high-skilled chain migration, something that conservatives have railed against for quite some time. You know, we as conservatives, we rail against chain migration. Why are you going to come here without any merit or with just by knowing someone? And the counter argument, and I don't think there's much basis to this, is, well, are you going to bring an H-1B visa holder without their family? They're not going to be as productive. Well, just don't bring the H-1B visa holder at all. I mean, that kind of solves it. And so President Trump is addressing both problems simultaneously. President Trump also suspended J-1 visas. A J-1 visa is a cultural and educational exchange visa. So President Trump suspending the J-1 visa program is around cultural exchange. It's a lot of professors and a lot of scholars that come under the J-1 program. Now, mind you, the data shows that the Chinese Communist Party, they take advantage of this program through the Confucius Institutes and other gateways into our country. This is definitely not the time to allow more Chinese Communist Party affiliates or surrogates into the United States. President Trump also suspended L-1A visas, which are intercompany transfer executive or manager visas. These are non-immigrant classifications that allow U.S. employers to transfer an executive or manager from one of its affiliated foreign offices to one of the offices in the United States. So, for example, Intel or IBM, they might have an executive or a manager in Tokyo or in New Delhi that they think would better be placed in the United States, which would actually create more competition within the CEO labor pool in America. Now, out of all the suspensions of visas, this one, I don't really care if the ruling class that has now been bowing to Black Lives Matter, if they have to compete for a job or have their wages go down quite a lot in the executive or manager band. It's not exactly something that concerns me that much. However, with that being said, I do think being strict on immigration right now is right on a variety of different levels. There's no shortage of action going on with our exclusive partners at BetOnline.ag. Sports are slowly making its way back with UFC, boxing, NASCAR, and soccer leading the way, and BetOnline has all the best odds and lines for the upcoming games and matches. You need more? BetOnline has simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC happening every day live for you to check out. Looking for something else other than sports? BetOnline also has hundreds of live casino games, poker tournaments, and all the best props in the business. Visit BetOnline.ag or use your mobile device and join today to receive your new welcome bonus and start playing now. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Visit BetOnline.ag. Don't forget that promo code PODCAST1. BetOnline.ag, promo code PODCAST1. So mind you, this move will help ensure that American workers will take first priority in securing jobs as we recover from the economic impacts of the lockdown and the coronavirus. Now, at a time when so many Americans are out of work, it would be unbelievably irresponsible to allow foreign labor to take these job opportunities from the hardworking men and women of our country. Now, during February and April of 2020, over 17 million jobs were lost in industries in which employers were seeking to fill positions tied to H-2B non-immigrant visas. And more than 20 million American workers lost their jobs in key industries where employers are currently requesting H-1B and L workers to fill positions. The May unemployment rate for young Americans in particular, who competed with certain J non-immigrant visa applicants, was 29.9% for 16 to 19-year-olds and 23.2% for 20 to 24-year-olds. Naturally, Americans overwhelmingly support this move and see this as a right course of action as we recover as a nation. A Washington Post University of Maryland poll found that 65% of those polled support pausing immigration into the country, including 61% of minority respondents. That's right, 61% of minority respondents support pausing immigration. A Pew Research poll found 81% of Americans see mass immigration as a threat as we confront the challenges posed by coronavirus. Boy, the mainstream media is not going to tell you this. Can you get 81% of Americans to agree on anything right now? Well, I can. 81% of all Americans see mass, unlimited immigration as a threat to confront the challenge posed by coronavirus. So President Trump is not just advocating for something true. He's advocating for something popular. It's something right that the Americans actually support. What's really interesting is Democrats used to support policies like this that put American workers first, even in normal times. In 2015, Senator Bernie Sanders said of America's youth,
"You think we should open the borders and bring in a lot of low-wage workers? Or do you think maybe we should try to get jobs for those kids?"
Bernie Sanders also spoke from the floor of the Senate, or it might have been when he was in the House of Representatives. I think it was the floor of the Senate, saying that cheap and unskilled immigration was being pushed by the Koch brothers. Play tape.
"The level of immigration we permit, even up to a level of open borders, about sharply increasing
open borders.
Foreign aid.
That's a Koch brothers proposal.
The idea, really?
Of course. I mean, that's a right-wing proposal, which says essentially there is no United States.
But it would make a lot of global poor richer, wouldn't it?
And it'd make everybody in America poor. Then you're doing away with the concept of a nation state. And I don't think there's any country in the world which believes in that. If you believe in a nation state, or in a country called the United States, or UK, or Denmark, or any other country, you have an obligation, in my view, to do everything.
Even former President Barack Obama warned against the negative impacts of unchecked mass migration as a senator when he said that it, quote, it threatens to depress the further wages of the blue-collar Americans, and it puts a strain on already overburdened safety net. So why would they oppose an executive order that puts American workers first in a time of crisis? This isn't political. Both Republicans and Democrats have lost jobs as a result of this pandemic, and this will benefit all Americans. Now, mind you, you can start to see the people that are opposing these measures. And they're the typical people that hate Trump and hate everything he does at all costs. So Amazon and these massive corporations are already speaking out against President Trump. Jeff Bezos, the world's wealthiest man, who has a net worth well over $110 to $120 billion, based on the day and based on the stock price, has come out aggressively against President Trump. They said this, quote, "We oppose the administration's short-sighted approach to banning visas." Twitter even came out and said this, and Jack Dorsey, their CEO, retweeted it. They said, quote, "This proclamation undermines America's greatest economic asset, its diversity. People from all over the world come here to join our labor force, pay taxes, and contribute to our global competitiveness on the world stage." Now, I want to challenge this because people say that diversity is America's number one strength. Now, while I do believe diversity can be a strength, I want to challenge this a little bit. Is it really our greatest economic asset? I think it is a economic asset if it's rooted in economic freedom. So Twitter is part of this corporate narrative that says that diversity is America's strength. Now, while I recognize that diversity can be important and we shouldn't dismiss the idea of being tolerant of other people's views, I would argue that America has a very unique culture. That America's culture, built on freedom, on e pluribus unum, on in God we trust, on Judeo-Christian values, on first principles and natural rights, is, yes, we acknowledge that people's differences, but there has to be an assimilation quality. That actually, what America's greatest economic asset, I think, it was our moral standing in the world. I think our greatest economic asset, where America had its greatest economic period of growth, is when we had stable families. When we had children being raised by mothers and fathers, where we had strong communities that looked after each other. It's very interesting. The overemphasis on economic growth at all costs, despite the cultural carnage, actually results in lower economic growth long term because it gives the leftists power and they have no interest in economic growth. But an emphasis actually on strong families, a culture based on a belief in God, the rule of law, playing by the rules, understanding that you're here to build a new future, not burn down the dreams of other people. In the 50s and 60s and 70s, there were plenty of problems with America. I'm not defending everything that was happening during that period of time. But one thing that we got right is our divorce rates and the single motherhood rate was far lower then than it is today. And that actually helped create America to be a 1980s economic powerhouse. We sowed the fruit of strong families, impenetrable communities a decade later. And then after that, you start to see other decisions that were made then less than favorable. And so I think our greatest economic asset is not even economic. I think our greatest asset was that America was a country where you could come succeed from anywhere across the world, but there was an expectation that you would speak the language. There was an expectation that you would assimilate. There was an expectation that you would come and be part of a culture that was maybe different from the place you came from. And so the overemphasis, the hyperfixation when people say diversity is our strength. And look, this might be a very provocative thing to say, but when is too much diversity too much? When is too much diversity actually not allowing a country to assimilate, not allowing a country to go through some cohesiveness? So after bringing in a million people into America every single year, a great analogy is after a big meal, you have to have a time to digest. And now, mind you, my critics will say I don't have compassion, I hate other people. That's not true at all. In fact, I make the argument that bringing in too many people into America too quickly does a disservice to the people that were already here. It does a disservice to the country that they're coming from, and it does a disservice to the people that are coming here. There are limitations on how many people a country can currently take. There are natural resource limitations. There are assimilation limitations. And now, mind you, I recognize in the 1900s, there were significant contributions by immigrants. However, those immigrants came here legally, spoke the language, assimilated, and they understood that they were coming to America for a very specific purpose of building a new life, of coming to this American experiment and participating in it. One of my most incredible experiences has been going in Los Angeles to the Cuban community. That's right, Los Angeles, not Miami. There's a strong and robust Cuban community in Los Angeles. And they recognize that even though they grew up in Cuba under Fidel Castro, that the moment they came to America, they had to learn English and they were going to be Americans. I actually think that's healthy for a country. And I think the rejection of that long term actually creates more conflict than the lack of recognition of it might actually solve. I think that there has to be some ground rules for if you come to America, you have to speak English. If you come to America, there's an expectation that you're not going to come on government assistance or welfare, that there's an expectation that you're not going to break the law. That is actually what made the American experiment work throughout the 1900s. Now, mind you, there were periods of immigration where America went through a lot of immigration and then almost basically no immigration for 10 or 20 years. And those 10 or 20 years where we went through almost no immigration were the 1950s and 1960s with very, very low levels. And cultural cohesion is critical. Now, mind you, in the ideal, I want smart, capable people to come to the United States. However, in all things, there must be priorities that are made. And the priority that must be made today is one that puts our workers, our carpenters, our plumbers, our entrepreneurs, our architects, our middle-class workers first and foremost, not the needs and wants of interests of people from other countries. And as a closing thought, the White House is claiming that by the end of this calendar year, perhaps 500,000 Americans will have jobs that otherwise would have been filled by foreign citizens whose entry will now be blocked by the executive order that Donald Trump announced today. That is 500,000 Americans that will have dignity, a paycheck, a livelihood, thanks to President Trump signing that executive order. More of this, Mr. President, more playing offense, more setting the terms of engagement. The left is going to call you mean names no matter what you do. Deliver for American workers. Advocate for it. Be proud of it. The states that the president needs to deliver to win, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, they are cheering at this executive order. And they are the ones that have been most harmed by the globalist, unlimited immigration policies of the cartel of Washington, D.C. When running a business, HR issues can kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and more. HR manager salaries are not cheap. In fact, they're an average of over $70,000 a year. Bambi, spelled B-A-M-B-E-E, was created specifically for small businesses. You can get a dedicated HR manager, craft HR policy, and maintain your compliance, all for just $99 a month. With Bambi, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for just $99 a month. Month to month, there's no hidden fees. Cancel anytime. You didn't start your business because you wanted to spend all your time in HR compliance. Let Bambi help and get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambi.com/Kirk right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambi.com/Kirk. That's Bambee.com/Kirk. So our team was just speaking about clueless airheads. So that was a beautiful transition to Sean King. Sean King is a Black Lives Matter activist, if you're not familiar with him. If you want to see cluelessness, if you want to see confidence in being incorrect all the time, please pursue Sean King. The guy is one of the most dangerous, pernicious deceivers in the history of the spoken language. So he's a Black Lives Matter activist. People say he's not even black. Is that right? It's like a debate, right? There's a whole thing of whether he's black or not. I'm not going to get into that, but he's white. He's not black. He might be half black, half white, or he knew someone that was black growing up. I don't know, but I'm not getting into that. The point is that Sean King is clueless, okay? This guy, he has a pretty big following. I don't know why they still take him seriously. So look, I'm going to read this tweet for you, and now it's catching fire because now the whole statue removal campaign. I mean, you take down one statue of Theodore Roosevelt, all of a sudden the radical atheist secular left, they get really excited of what else might be next. So he says this, the brilliant Sean King says, yes, I think the statues of the white European they claim is Jesus should also come down. They are also a form of white supremacy. Always have been. In the Bible, when the family of Jesus wanted to hide and blend in, guess where they went? Egypt, not Denmark. Tear them down. He continues by saying, yes, all murals and stained glass windows of white Jesus and his European mother and their white friends should also come down. They are a gross form of white supremacy created as tools of oppression, racist propaganda. They should all come down. So Sean King is basically saying that the depictions of Jesus as a white male, they should all be removed, and that white Jesus is a lie and a tool of oppression. He also asserted that white people would never accept religion from a brown man. So Sean King hasn't really opened a Bible recently. Revelation 1:14 says that Christ's skin and hair were white as snow. However, there's a deeper reason for this. It's not a tool of white supremacy. You go to certain parts of Africa or you go as far east as India, the depictions of Christ always look more similar to the population that they're communicating to. This is very customary. If you go to Central America, when they were putting up symbology of Christ in the 1700s and the 1800s, Christ looked a little bit more Central American. He got a little bit more of a tan. And so it's not a matter of white supremacy. Maybe it's like, oh, we want to have the symbol of Christ who unifies all people to look like the people we're actually talking to. What is this really here? Sean King has a lot of problems with Jesus statues. So that's his new crusade, no pun intended, where he wants to go after the actual depictions and the celebrations of Jesus Christ. Now, I can just hear it right now. These Christian pastors in the Protestant community, they're going to say, well, I don't believe that there should be statues of Jesus anyway. I'm a Protestant. I'm a Calvinist. I don't like the idolatry of Christ. I could just hear them saying that. Okay, well, if you're not going to fight when they're taking down statues of Jesus Christ just because you might not have the right theological agreement with them, when exactly are you going to fight woke Christian pastors? See, these woke Christian pastors that were raising their fist in the air and posting the Black Lives Matter tiles that I called cowards, that I called frauds, and I took a big price, and I took it on the chin because of that, and thank you for those of you that went to charliekirk.com/support and chip in some money, those monthly donors. Thank you, and God bless you, because that allows us to continue to stand for truth and tell the advertisers that want to run away from us, you know, enjoy your Huawei, whatever. So thank you for allowing us to continue to tell the truth. Now, Sean King, I'm just going to read from a Fox News article because we have to tell the truth about this guy. He says, quote, it says this, Quote, King was once a leading voice in the Black Lives Matter movement, but fell from grace when his race was questioned and he was accused of being a Caucasian, falsely portraying himself as black. And continues, I have been told for most of my life that the white man on my birth certificate is not my biological father and that my actual biological father is a light-skinned black man. My mother and I have discussed her affair. She was a young woman in a bad relationship. I have no judgment. So Sean King is hyper-focused on his own race baiting. I see a picture of him. He looks awfully white to me. But again, what he's saying is foolish whether he's white or black. I mean, maybe he wants to be black. Maybe he's not black. Who cares? See, I don't judge people by the color of their skin, unlike the left. I don't categorize people by the color of their skin, unlike the left. It's irrelevant. Are you a good person, Sean King? No, you're actually a fool. Are you smart? No. Do you have wisdom? Absolutely not. Do you have a good worldview? It's sick and twisted. So I don't care about the color of your skin. I don't care if your father had an affair with the mother, or your mother had an affair on the father, or it's not really biological father, even though it says you're white. That would make you a liar. But it's somewhat immaterial. Your race, in fact, it's completely a material race, because I don't care. You see, only the left cares about skin color. The left is hyper-fixated on skin color. You know what the left and the KKK have in common? They care about skin color more than character. The left and the KKK care first about skin color, and then maybe about character later on, or ideology. You see, that's why the left is downstream from the KKK, the hyperfixation on the race, hyperfixation on your immutable characteristics. You see, we have gone back decades. We have gone back decades in American discourse. We've regressed tremendously. I'm getting emails at freedom@charliekirk.com, and please send me in your emails, freedom@charliekirk.com, of young people that are losing their jobs, that are feeling that they will lose their jobs if they don't take a knee at work. I mean, there's a young lady that communicated to us, and she was working at a Wendy's. And she's like, Charlie, I'm afraid that when all my coworkers go take a knee at a certain time on Juneteenth, I might lose my job. Didn't hear back from her. I don't know what she did. And I don't know what advice to give her because I don't know everything surrounding her life. I know that myself personally. If someone would tell me to go take a knee to anyone but Jesus Christ, I'd say, see you later. I'll go find another job. I don't care the names that people would tell me. Courage is the hardest of the good traits to find. It's the hardest. It's not the most important. It's not. The most important is a commitment to truth and telling the truth. Lies are the gateway to all other evil. If you think about it, the lies you tell yourself, the lies you tell others, the lies you tell the world, the commitment to a lie, that's where all other evil stems from. A commitment to the truth is very important. But if you don't stand for the truth when it matters, then what good is the truth? You must have courage. And right now, we have people that privately know the truth. We have people that privately understand the truth. We have people that are the silent majority. But why are you silent? And the excuses I get, well, I don't want to lose my business. I don't want to get kicked out of my job. I don't want to lose my friends. I might lose my family members. Those are all understandable, respectable answers, by the way. However, in your hierarchy of what matters, is that material satisfaction more important than what you know to be true? Because in my calculation, nothing can be more important than the pursuit of what is true and what is good in the world. And of course, don't have pride about the truth, because pride was the original sin. We know in the story of Genesis that the commitment to not having humility under God and believing that we as human beings can do it all, that will make you fall. So don't have pride just because you have the truth, but instead be humble under the truth. And so what we see today is a complete and total regression. We're seeing people categorized and compartmentalized based on their skin color. We are seeing people grouped on their immutable characteristics, things they cannot control. We frequently mention the I Have a Dream speech by Martin Luther King, that I have a dream that people will not be judged by the color of their skin, but the contents of their character. I'm paraphrasing. Let's play Martin Luther King. I Have a Dream speech. Play tape.
This nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Yeah. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
Ask yourself the question, are we living out that dream? Are we living out the vision of the civil rights activists? Or are we living out the vision of the segregationists? Are we living out the vision of the people that were fighting Martin Luther King? Do you know right now there are black-only dormitories going up all across the country? In CHAZ, or CHOP, which, by the way, breaking news, the police are going back into CHOP, so Antifa's going to have to run home to their basements. They might actually have to give up their black-only gardening areas, which they had. They had black-only gardening areas. Party's over, CHOP. Run away because you're going to get arrested sometime soon. But we're going backwards as a country, not forwards. There's a lie that has taught our young people. There's a very pernicious lie that societies will continually be progressing towards a greater moral standard. This is not true. We're told this in school, that progress, the more that we continue to move forward, remember that was Barack Obama's re-election phrase in 2012, forward, somehow those things will be better. What if you're actually progressing in an opposite direction? What if your progress, your wokishness, your radicalism is actually against all of the righteous progress that was made prior to you? What if the progress is actually going to put you back in the 1950s, or God forbid, the 1850s, or the 1750s? Because eventually, you run out of things to correct until you can go backwards to create things that used to be wrong. What do I mean by that? When you actually fulfill yourself equal under the law, and then you get closer to equal opportunity, eventually people want equal outcomes, or they want retribution for not having equal outcomes. They say, well, something bad happened to this group of people 100 years ago. Therefore, we must tear everything down, tear down the statues, tear down our history, burn the textbooks, penalize people on the call of their skin because they look similar to people that were in the 1860s. They just look similar, despite the fact, and I've said this on this show many times, six generations prior, seven actually, I have the documentation to prove it, Will Crocken, on my father's side, served in the United States Union Army Civil War. So if they're trying to generalize me, that I was on the side of evil, my bloodline fought on the right side of the conflict. Now, I'm not trying to say I'm a better person because of it. Here's what's interesting. I'm not actually saying I'm a good person because of something he did. That would be foolish, wouldn't it? So every rule must work on each side inversely and conversely. So, for example, I don't deserve a medal because I had a war hero as a relative in the Union, on the Union cause of the Civil War. I don't deserve anything good because of that. So why does someone deserve some condemnation or some guilt because something happened seven generations before, because they fought for a bad cause, or because their ancestors might have been slave owners? Why do they deserve condemnation for that? What makes America, it's such an obvious thing, a third grader is taught this, usually now they're not anymore. Anyone that has reason, not radicalism, because that's really what's happening right now, is the struggle between reason and radicalism. Anyone that's rooted in reason knows, oh yeah, you shouldn't be judged by something that happened a couple generations before you. You can't control that. It's out of your control. That's so unbelievably obvious, I thought we'd never have to have that conversation again. Now we are. Now it's like, oh no, take a knee because you look like someone that used to be evil. Like, excuse me? You understand how racist that is? Could you imagine if it was the other side? Could you imagine if you are telling people to go around because they have German accents to go take a knee because of something, their language sounds similar to something that happened in the 1930s and 40s? It would be an endless cycle and circle of this dangerous nonsense. Democrats try to have a monopoly on Martin Luther King, but they're actually trying to get away from it recently. I haven't actually heard a lot of Martin Luther King references from the left or the Democrats recently, because his most famous quote is one that they are categorically rejecting. The most famous quote of judging people on character and worldview, not skin color, is one that the left can't possibly believe in. Now, I get the question a lot, well, Charlie, why are they so focused on skin color? And as we've gone into in major depth in previous episodes of The Charlie Kirk Show, and please go back in the archives and subscribe, give us a five-star review, and check out those previous episodes, where we say that the left, they use tribal conflict to their advantage. They use tribal conflict to try to give themselves more political power, because for them, that is their religion. For them, that is the most important thing. Now, mind you, when they start to go after people's history, we predicted this on the Charlie Kirk Show. In fact, I think it was just about a week ago when I did a monologue on this. There is no controlling the mob once you get them started. And so, in kind of just a very humorous and lighthearted way, I hope the mob comes for them. Yale University, a morally corrupt institution. Yale has come under scrutiny now after it was pointed out that the school's name came from Elihu Yale, who was a slave trader. Hashtag cancel Yale started trending. And amid ongoing controversy over names and statues, conservatives Jesse Kelly and Ann Coulter pointed out the hypocrisy of the left by revealing the history behind Yale's name. So are they going to rename Yale? Are they going to rename Stanford University for being named after Leland Stanford, who built the railroads with almost slave labor of Asian Americans in the 1800s? Once the mob gets started, it's not like a video game that you can control. It's an organism that has a life of its own. It's based on rage. It's based on revenge. It's based on highly emotive, pathological inklings. Maybe they will rename Yale. So I think the president should come out and say he does not think Yale should be renamed. Therefore, the left will say that Yale should be renamed, and Yale will be renamed. That's three-dimensional chess. President Trump should come out and say, I think Yale should stay exactly named the way it is. It'll be, by election day, it'll have a different name. It'll be brilliant. It'll be awesome. Because all these people that are so proud of their heritage out of these left-wing Marxist apparatchiks that staff our entire government that went to Yale, and they have all their Yale paraphernalia all throughout their closets and Yale on their resume, they'll have to rename it. It'll be amazing. They'll call it something like the New Haven Center for Progress, Equality, and a Better Tomorrow, or the New Haven Center for Environmental Justice and Rawlsian Thinking on the Economy, or something so full of nonsense and balderdash. So President Trump should come out in favor of all these universities not changing their names, and they'll all get renamed, which just the calisthenics that these universities will have to go through over that will be so pleasant to watch. Now, mind you, I just want to remind you, all of this entire conversation around statues in the last couple weeks and last couple months started because of one white police officer did something evil on the streets of Minneapolis with three police officers around him that did nothing. All of it started from there. Yeah. By the way, all Democrat city council, Democrat mayor, Democrat governor, all of this pandemonium, the riots, the looting, the arson, the burning, the deletion of our history, the corporate funding, the capitulation, the overcompensation of please don't harm my business next. Now, mind you, the rioting was not just in the streets of New York or Los Angeles or Philadelphia. It wasn't just the Versace stores that were looted. It wasn't just the Best Buys that were ransacked. It wasn't just that. The rioting was happening to CrossFit, where the CrossFit CEO was threatened and he eventually had to resign. See, rioting is not just the way that you think it is. It's a lot deeper. New rioting is a form of extortion. Pay us money. Pay BlackLivesMatter.com money so that we can legalize sex work, abolish prisons, abolish police, and destroy the Western prescribed nuclear family. Pay us money or else we're going to come after you. And so that's why if you have bought anything from any sort of online vendor in the last 5 years, you've probably had your inbox flooded by every single from Postmates to Uber Eats to Nike to Adidas to everything. I've been getting emails about, we stand for racial equality and justice and Black Lives Matter. We're going to hire only black individuals for the next month, which is unbelievably racist against the 1964 Civil Rights Act. You can't just hire people based on their skin color. It's racist. One of the crowning achievements of Western society was the elimination of tribalism, was the recognition of the individual. This is something that we can thank John Locke for, that we can thank the Bible for, that we can thank the Magna Carta for, that we can thank Rene Descartes for. the recognition of you as a sovereign individual to think, to dream, to believe, to have ambitions. However, now we don't have any of that. Now we have a 2,000-year digression back into tribalism. And guess what? For all you leftists out there that are very smug, that think that you've played this one perfectly, for us, the mob's already been in our doorstep for the last couple of years. We're standing for truth. We're up against them, and we're not going to give an inch. But if you think you're going to be spared, they're coming for you next. I want to tell you guys about our amazing partner, PCmatic. PCmatic is a whiteless, next-generation antivirus system designed to stop modern threats like ransomware. The great, I'm not going to say his name, let's say ALX. He's amazing. He's coming on the show. He has PCmatic on all of his devices. He loves PCmatic. It's good for XP, Vista, Windows 7, 8, 10, Windows servers, Macs. If you guys want to protect your computers from the Chinese Communist Party, they meet in rooms, and they think, they dream, they wonder, they plot, they plan how to take over American computers. That's what the Chinese Communist Party does. So what do you want to do to prevent that? Well, you go to PCmatic.com/Charlie for $50 for 5 devices for 1 year with a full 30-day money-back guarantee. And if you act right now, PCmatic has offered my listeners a free month of security protection with the purchase of an annual license. Again, to get this world-class security that keeps your computers running great, go to PCmatic.com/Charlie. Only PCmatic has American research, development, and support. PCmatic's competition is made in foreign countries, many where the viruses originate. PCmatic.com/Charlie. PCmatic.com/Charlie. So I want to close the show with a great article from City Journal. And I want to thank those of you that have gone to charliekirk.com/support and have chipped in to be monthly donors. Thank you, guys. You guys make this show possible. So it's a great article. It says, "Why Can't Big City Democrats Reform the Police?" And kind of the dirty little secret here is the union money that flows through these cities that have not allowed us to reform the police and also have more structural problems than we can name. So it says this: the Democrat Party of the late 1950s and 1960s, and again, I'm reading from Stephen Malanga on the City Journal, "Why Can't Big City Democrats Reform the Police?" The Democrat Party of the late 1950s and 1960s was principally a blue-collar political movement. It dominated northeastern and midwestern cities through powerful local political machines dispensing patronage to supporters, including plum positions in police departments. Corruption was endemic, and it often occurred at the expense of black residents. So the article continues. It talks about the Newark and Detroit riots and riots in 150 other cities that summer, 1967, brought sweeping political changes, including the election of a generation of new black urban Democrat leaders. But policing remained a glaring problem. In Detroit, voters elected radical labor organizer Coleman Young, an African-American, as mayor in 1974. He went to war with his own police department, slashing its ranks by 20% and installing a black police commissioner with instructions to reduce enforcement in the city radically. Both strategies, hiring more black police leaders and officers and reducing police presence, became common in major cities. Crime exploded in Detroit and in most American urban areas, as middle-class residents, predominantly white, left for safer suburbs. Poorer blacks living in increasingly dangerous city neighborhoods were the biggest victims. Again, that's Stephen Malagna, City Journal. By the way, this is what's happening right now. I don't want to see this happen, but a friend of the Charlie Kirk Show who lives in Santa Barbara has said that there are no rentals available at all in all of Santa Barbara right now. Santa Barbara, California is about an hour and a half, 2 hours outside of Los Angeles. Really gorgeous, really nice. Why is there no rentals? It's because people are leaving Los Angeles as quick as you could possibly imagine that still kind of want the California lifestyle, maybe want accessibility to Los Angeles. And they are saying, we are getting out of here. We are going to Santa Barbara. Goodbye. And home values are skyrocketing because there just is not enough property to be able to facilitate the demand. By the way, if there's no safety, there's no investment, there's no jobs in these inner cities, you are going to see the carnage that we saw in Chicago this last weekend repeat itself, with 5 minors that were killed in the streets of Chicago, 72 people shot over Father's Day. And where's Black Lives Matter? If you're listening to this and you have a friend that says Black Lives Matter and they're a white suburbanite that is so foolish they shouldn't be given the time of the day, go type in Chicago Father's Day weekend and send them that article and say, why are you so silent on this? Why is BlackLivesMatter.com not speaking out against this? Why is M4BL.org, the March for Black Lives organization, so silent on this? Why is Black Lives Matter not walking in the streets, marching in the streets right now, demanding justice. I thought that's a big word, right? Justice for black people being dead. Because I've said it once, I'll say it again, and I'll say it a third time and a tenth time. Black lives do not matter to Black Lives Matter. They just don't. They pick a specific black victim that fits their narrative. Black victim, white oppressor, happens to be a police officer, on video, doing something evil, put it on social media, riot and burn down all of America, retreat police from the inner cities, you get what you want. A destruction of urban America. And guess what? You're right. You'll be elected endlessly because people have no choice but to continue to elect you. And Republicans will say, screw it, we'll go win the suburban voters, rinse, repeat every couple decades. None of that is good, by the way. I don't support any of that, but that's what's going to happen. And that's what happened in the 70s and 80s. So those of you that are young, that have enjoyed New York City at all as a visitor or a tourist or a resident the last 10 or 15 years, you can thank Mayor Giuliani in the early 1990s and all the reforms he put in place. Go back in the archives of the Charlie Kirk Show. Go listen to our episode with Mayor Giuliani last week. It's incredible. The dirty secret of all Democrat politics and policing is that for years, reforms have been blocked by the same politicians who keep promising them. It's because of the money that flows between unions and Democrat politicians. This is the same, by the way, for teacher unions as well. And look, either we're going to be serious about fixing our inner cities or we're going to allow them to become Gotham City all across the country. The Democrats want that. The Democrats want the crime. The Democrats don't care about the bloodshed. Play tape right now of Lori Lightfoot acting as if she is Joseph Stalin going after people that might dare violate her stay-at-home order during the lockdown. Play tape.
How it's going to be. We will shut you down. We will cite you. And if we need to, we will arrest you and we will take you to jail. Period. There should be nothing unambiguous about that. Don't make us treat you like a criminal. But if you act like a criminal and you violate the law and you refuse to do what is necessary to save lives in the city in the middle of a pandemic, we will take you to jail. Period.
Now Lori Lightfoot did an exclusive interview with the New York Times saying, well, maybe the defund police was not the best thing. Maybe it's being misinterpreted and more carnage. Lori Lightfoot, who, again, I know far too well from a distance because I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, and I know people that have had to leave Chicago for other states because the bloodshed and the carnage is so bad in Chicago. Or they'll just go to Kenilworth, which is the equivalent of Santa Barbara. They'll go to Glenview. They'll go to Northbrook. They'll go to Schaumburg. They'll go to Bolingbrook. They'll go to Hinsdale. They'll go to Joliet. You can fill in the blank of the Chicago suburb, and guess what's going to happen in the city of Chicago? The ruling class will leave. The tax base will crash. The schools will continue to suffer. Gang violence will go through the roof. And the police, they're the middle-class families that live in Cicero, that, by the way, they're the ones whose houses were being burnt down, that live right near Midway Airport. I know that neighborhood super well. They're the ones that will not be able to police, and they're going to say, screw it, we are done. We're not going to do this. We're going to police our own neighborhoods. We'll take care of Cicero. Guess what? We're not going to take care of Maywood. We're not going to go take care of, you know, 34th and Pulaski. We're not going to go take care of U.S. Cellular, formerly Comiskey Park. We're not going to take care of the West Side. Screw you guys. And what means screw you guys, like, you don't want us there? Our own neighborhoods are at risk because you guys went and burned down our houses and you guys picketed and pillaged all the cop-friendly businesses around Midway Airport. Lori Lightfoot, who's kind of an Eva Peron type, she's never found a position or a dictatorship that she doesn't want to use power for. She doesn't dare try to find justice in the streets of Chicago. And guess what? Lori Lightfoot is more worried about finding black pastors that dare open their doors on Easter than actually finding murderers. Did you know that 60% of murders in Chicago go unsolved? 60%. Can you imagine that? 60% of murders in Chicago go unsolved. Did you know in the last 2 to 3 weeks, this is according to a Chicago police officer that I know very well, 4 first-degree murderers that were indicted were let on 10% cash bonds that are now just released to society? First-degree murderers. The families that just lost loved ones, their murderers are now back on the loose, maybe to commit more crimes. 60% of murders go unsolved in Chicago. Yet, and by the way, in 2018, it was 1 out of 6. It was even lower than that. So 40% might even be high. And this is according to NPR.org. Chicago's dismal murder solve rate even worse when victims are black. Because the police aren't welcome there. They can't do their job. They're told to leave. And by the way, the left is way more concerned right now over the Aunt Jemima syrup and eliminating a black woman from being on a can of syrup or a bottle of syrup, I should say, than the bloodshed happening in Chicago. Because the bloodshed in Chicago is just a rounding error for them. The bloodshed in Chicago, they just don't care. The bloodshed in Chicago for them is just built in. And by the way, there's no political opportunity there. They already control the inner cities. They already control Bobby Rush's former district in Chicago. They already control all the inner cities of Philadelphia. They take black people for granted. And now you're going to see record amounts of black people die. I said, and you guys can go back, and we are right early and right often here on the Charlie Kirk Show. And I don't say that with any sorts of pride. I say that with a commitment to you guys as listeners, saying that we spend hours and hours and hours of research here. The day George Floyd happened, I sat on Ask Me Anything. Go back in the archives. I said this. What did I say? I said more black people are going to die this summer than in summers past because police are going to feel unwelcome in the cities and criminals are going to go loose. I called it. And now we're seeing that. The bloodiest on record. And right now, as I finish up this commentary, Andrew Jackson statue is attempting to be torn down right in front of the White House. They're trying to create their own autonomous zone. They just vandalized the St. John's Church again. And most Republicans are doing nothing. The president's doing everything he possibly can. But most Republicans are just sitting on their hands, doing nothing, and allowing our history, allowing our icons, allowing our church, allowing everything we love in our country to be taken down and burned to the ground. They hate America. They have resentment for it. And it's going to come down to whether or not we want to stand for truth. And who cares what the left is going to call us? Who cares what the Washington Post or the New York Times is going to call us? Bring it on. By the way, one of the most liberating things they ever did to me is they called me every name in the book 4 years ago. Every name in the book. I said, okay, that's our starting point. Then I don't care about you. I'm going to say what is true and screw you guys. I hope you guys get to a place of freedom like that, because so many people that are listening to this program right now, and I get your emails, freedom@charliekirk.com, you guys say, Charlie, I'm afraid. I get it. I'm not diminishing. I'm definitely not minimizing it. However, I pray that you guys can get to a place where I'm at, where I'm not afraid to speak my mind, because I've already been called every single name in the book. That is true freedom. True freedom is not caring what other people are going to say, but you stand with courage for what you know is true. And for Black Lives Matter out there, do black toddlers being murdered in the streets of Chicago, do those black lives matter to you? Do those black toddlers, those 6 and 7 year olds that were murdered in the streets over Father's Day weekend, is that even a mention out of any of your Twitter accounts? Or are you more concerned about taking down statues of Theodore Roosevelt and Andrew Jackson? We're in the midst of a culture war. Republican Party is basically doing nothing. President Trump is fighting alone. We here on this program are fighting for truth every single day and with courage. So those of you that go to charliekirk.com/support and chip in $5, $10, $20, $100, we even had a $500. Thank you. God bless you guys. It helps keep our program going. Helps cover production costs. Helps cover the research team, their time and their attention. Helps cover all the costs of the program. Thank you, guys. It allows us to be self-sufficient. Know the truth. Fight for truth. God bless you guys. Please go to Turning Point USA, TPUSA.com. Email me your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com. We're going to send out another 5 books. For the first 5 people that subscribe, give us a 5-star review and email us, freedom@charliekirk.com. Just screenshot those reviews and email us, MAGA Doctrine, New York Times bestseller. God bless you guys. Thanks so much. Talk to you soon.